Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Tenants at the former Star Academy have received eviction notices from the state of South Dakota. Former state legislator Dan Ahlers is a Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate in 2020. And does free speech push the rule of law? It's Wednesday and time to welcome our Dakota political junkies. Joining us now from the SDPB Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City, we have former lawmaker and Rapid City Journal columnist Noel Hamel. Noel, welcome back.
Thank you, Laura. It's good to be back.
On the phone with us, Madison Daily Leader publisher John Hunter. John, thanks for being here as well.
Thanks, Laura. You forgot to mention Noel is a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame.
You know, I try to pick two things, and then the rest of the resume has to just sit and rest for next time, John.
Oh, my gosh.
But yes, that is accurate information as well. I want to start with some columns that both of you wrote. And John Hunter, let's start with you, because in the Madison Daily Leader, you talk about what's happening in Box Elder with the city attorney. Give us an update of what we know and mostly what we don't know.
Well, of course, this is quite a distance from Madison, so I'm relying on other journalists to fill me in on this. I don't have first-hand experience, but the city of Box Elder has paid its former city attorney $100,000 less payroll deductions and so forth in exchange for her resignation. That is in addition to her salary. And so it's been kind of quiet now. The Rapid City Journal did some nice work in trying to dig this up, but by and large, city officials in Box Elder have not at all released the reason for this extraordinary payment. I call it extraordinary, meaning it's not ordinary for when you ask for resignations or have termination like that to have a large payment like this. So they did eventually release a kind of a separation agreement, but redacted some things, and it really didn't say, well, it didn't say it at all about the reasons for this. So my argument in my column indicated that the citizens of Box Elder deserve to know what this is all about. Why did they have a four-hour mediation session behind closed doors? Why the separation? Why the termination? The city attorney is a public official, and by all matter that I can think of, the citizens of Box Elder deserve to know.
Noel Hamel, would you like to weigh in on the notion of what citizens have deserve to know as government being public trust?
Absolutely. And, you know, I've seen so many cases like this over the years. And, you know, elected officials will, I hate to say this, but they'll hide behind the privacy shield. They'll say, this is a personnel issue, this is a privacy issue. But I'm totally in agreement with John Hunter. I thought his column was right on target. You know, and there are exceptions, but in general, when tax dollars are expended, if you're gonna charge tax dollars, $50,000 or whatever it is, the public really does have a right to know, especially in this case, why they have to expend this money. Now, having said that, I know that there have been exceptions. Where tax dollars are used for certain programs. A lot of them are juvenile and privacy is needed. But if you are paying a public official or a former public official to sever the contract, it's just really outside the realm not to make that public.
And John Noel said, you know, half of this is their money, but the other half is kind of their money too, right? Because how does this sort of work with where the money is coming from?
Right. There is a kind of a common, you'd call it insurance. It's not a company per se. It's a more of a pool, kind of an insurance pool among cities. And so that comes from that. Now, granted, it appears as though that's distant money, but frankly, Box Elder and many other cities pay premiums into that, and that money gets used, whether it's used by Box Elder, or in this case, a portion of that would be directly from Box Elder. On the other hand, if a settlement is made in Aberdeen or in Yankton or any other part of the state, part of their premiums would go to that too. So it is taxpayers' money, primarily Box Elder taxpayers. And in some cases, ratepayers, if you have a municipal electric and they use that municipal electric money to fund government, anyone who pays an electric bill, even if they don't pay property tax or pay sales tax or anything else, you know, frankly, if you're a citizen of that entity, you deserve to know.
I want to move on to a column that Noel Hamill has written for the Rapid City Journal that was published on September 29th, and you could read it at rapidcityjournal.com, the full words there. But this is about the South Dakota so-called riot-boosting legislation that Governor Noem was supportive of during the last legislative session. Now, the provisions of those laws, most of them have been put on hold by federal judge Lawrence Pearsall, with a preliminary injunction. And Noel says, hey, not so fast. We need to think about exactly where free speech begins and ends. And Noel, take it from here. What are your thoughts?
Well, just a little background, Lori. The legislature in 2019 passed Senate Bill 189 and two felony statutes. The intention of the lawmakers, and I think it was well-intended, was to address costs for anticipated rioting that could result from building Keystone Pipeline through South Dakota.
Anticipated rioting or anticipated protesting?
Well, okay, that's part of the discussion, isn't it? I mean, peaceful protest is absolutely part of our rights and constitutional rights. Rioting, by definition, can cross that line, and a result might be damage to property. It might be damage to the environment. But what the lawmakers intended to do was to write some legislation that would protect them and protect taxpayers in the event that this occurred. Now, that was taken to court, and that decision was appealed. I mean, the North Dakota protest judge stayed the project, and that decision was appealed, but then the Trump administration issued a new permit in March, and that's what was at the center of the hearing in Rapid City in June, which was a fascinating hearing, I thought. The plaintiffs argued that the new laws created a chilling effect on free speech and association and prevented them from soliciting support to protest the project because they said that they were afraid of criminal prosecution. They worried about damage awards against them. And so the judge, a couple of weeks ago, Judge Pearsall, as you pointed out, did fine for the plaintiffs in large part. He left intact some of the original statutes that South Dakota had on the books. But basically, he said that the new laws had gone too far. They were vague, it was an overreach, and that he focused really, Lori, on three or four words, which I hope we can discuss a little bit. In essence, what he said, if somebody directs you to do something, that's not protected. But if you simply advise somebody to do something or solicit funds, that is protected by the First Amendment. And that was one of the reasons that these laws were enjoined by right. Judge Pearsall.
We're going to bring you back in here in a minute, Noel, but I want to include John in the conversation. And John, this is there's really a nationwide effort from different states to enact legislation that many people are saying, I think is legislation in Texas, and some activists were arrested, and they said, we're passing this legislation to protect critical infrastructure, and the activists say, we're living in a day of climate change activism. Here it comes, and you can't stop civil disobedience because we're on a mission. So, John Hunter, as we look at this, is really a bigger conversation than what's happening in South Dakota, but it is balancing these two things that we hold dear, public safety and the right to assemble and the right to protest, the right to have civil disobedience.
Boy, Lori, I think you're right on the fact that these are balancing two things that we really like. Yeah. We like freedom of speech. We like the the right to protest. We like all those kind of things, and we also like public safety, and we like the fact that you shouldn't damage public property at the expense of taxpayers. So, yeah, it is a balancing thing, and in this case, I think it's and Noel's analysis was good. That Judge Pearsall was focused on things that were vague that probably need to clean up. So I'm going to take one step back in the fact that this legislation was passed fairly hastily without much public input in the last legislative session, which to me means it needs to go through another process, and that is by Judge Pearsall issuing the preliminary injunction. I think what that is going to lead to is modification of this law. It will maybe become more specific. It may include some things. It may take some things out. But in lieu of a good, solid legislative process where a bill is introduced and heard and all those kinds of things, this, remember, it came in on a placeholder bill
right
near the end of that. It's absent all that stuff that should have been done. Now we'll have to do that stuff anyway. So it's another rule to learn is go through the process correctly at the beginning, and you can avoid some of these, perhaps avoid some of these challenges here. But I think there is a solution to be reached in terms of laws, both here and in Texas and others, in the fact that we want participatory government. We want citizens to challenge their governments. We want them to do it peaceably, and we want them. I mean, that's what the Constitution guarantees is peaceable assembly, and then not to destroy things. So I think there is a solution in there that can be reached. It may bend back and forth over time, but I think it's out there.
And here's one of my big questions. When you talk about, you know, the millions of dollars in damage that North Dakota experienced and the waste and garbage and things that that's not really rioting. That's in some ways the expense of public safety and the expense of cleanup, just through thousands of people deciding that something is important enough to show up for. So, Noel, talk a little bit about the difference between, you know, people having a right to gather in mass to protest something that they find incredibly important versus the willful destruction of property, which is something we already have laws against.
Well, there is a difference, and no question about that. You have people protesting, whether it's in downtown Rapid City or Sioux Falls or North Dakota, you know, you're always going to have some public property damage. You'll have some things left behind. There'll be a cost that accrues to taxpayers, and I think most people understand that. To some degree, it's a matter of extent. Maybe it's a matter of deliberate trashing of the environment. All those things can be subjective, but the rioting, the judge was pretty clear. He relied on the litmus test for most of this is the Brandenburg decision, Brandenburg versus Ohio, and that's an interesting case that he cited because it brings into the discussion a Klan rally, and the head of the Klan was calling the people there to, that he said that there might be a reason to take action if white rights weren't protected, and the Supreme Court said there's he has that right to say those things, and that's different from inciting riot or directing riot or controlling riot. And Judge Pearsall said, you know, if you advise somebody to do something or encourage them or even solicit them, that's not against the law. But when you order them or direct them, that's the line that can't be crossed. So that's the difference between protected speech and unprotected speech. As far as the public cost of rioting, I think that would come into play if rioting was actually proved. If it's the public cost to the environment where rioting isn't proved or isn't the factor, then that's a different issue, Lori, and I think that's that falls back on local law enforcement as they're trying to make sure that protesters have a place and a way to protest, and maybe enforce local ordinances that prohibit, trashing the environment.
And John Hunter, there we are with that word rioting versus, assembling. Again, if the police, and a lot of this budget is really a law enforcement budget, and having to pay overtime expenses in these small areas in South Dakota, as we saw in North Dakota, just really not being ready financially for the amount of public safety assistance that they were going to need. So if the police show up, John Hunter, in riot gear, it's not necessarily a riot. What's a riot, John?
Absolutely. You're spot on that, Lori, and that is, I think the public does have a responsibility to pay for that kind of prevention or some sort of protection. You know, it really comes to mind if you look back in history and some great public protests of the past. How did those? So you look back at Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech in front of the Lincoln Memorial at the Reflecting Pond in Washington, D.C. Who knows how many hundreds of thousands of people were there? That was peaceable assembly. And for a lot of us, that was a great moment in American history. You see, the Million Man March. What about the mid-80s farm crisis where drove tractors to Washington, D.C.? Mm-hmm. We know there was extra law enforcement in place for those. We know there was litter left around or whatever that required some cleanup. And I think those are reasonable prices to pay collectively by governments through payment of taxes. But it gets to when you knock down the statue of Lincoln at the memorial, that there is a line that can be drawn that goes beyond kind of normal protest. And again, the bigger the crowd, the more of that kind of some sort of cost will be incurred, either it's through law enforcement or some sort of minor destruction. But I think it can be clear, maybe defined somehow, when you kind of willfully, drive a bulldozer through a building or set a building on fire they set construction equipment on fire. I remember that with the North Dakota protests. That seems to be on the wrong side of the line.
Right.
Well, and Lori, if I might interrupt, none of those laws or none of Judge Pearsall's ruling would get in the way of prosecuting for actual riot. I mean,
right.
You can still be prosecuted for destroying public property. So that's still intact.
And so I think we'll see more about this in the future, especially with John Hunter's point there that it's time to maybe include some other people in the conversation and not rush this, go back and try to figure out not only what are we trying to address, but what's the best, most effective way to do it, and maybe seeing the consequences of how quickly that legislation was passed. Great conversation. Before we let you go, let's talk about Dan Ahlers real quick, because he's a former state lawmaker from Del Rapids, now running against Governor Mike Rounds as a Democrat. Noel, we don't know for sure. Mike Rounds is having some fundraising going on, so we're assuming that he is going to run, but he hasn't officially announced. Now he has a Democratic challenger and a Republican challenger in Skylar Borglum.
Well, I would certainly think John Hunter would know Dan Ahlers pretty well, since he's from that neck of the woods. I actually served with Dan in the legislature, and he was, just in that limited experience, he was one of those Democrats who I found easy to work with. You could have conversations with him. He didn't seem like a demagogue. You could talk about...
Is that how you felt about the rest of the Democrats?
No, it's not.
I just like the way you said that. He wasn't a demagogue.
That's a fair comment, but to answer your question, and there are some demagogues, are there not, Lori?
I would not disagree with you there.
But Dan was, and in fact, in the South Dakota legislature, I didn't find very few. There were demagogues on both sides of the aisle. But what I was trying to say about Dan is that he, you could... And there were a lot of, even though they were in a distinct minority back, in 2009 and 10 when Dan and I were out there together, you could sit down and talk about issues and try to get support from both sides of the aisle. Just because you had the majority didn't mean that you shouldn't attempt to do that. And I always thought Dan was willing to listen. And I hope he felt the same way. I think it's a long shot. I mean, Mike Rounds, you know, his war chest is going to be considerable. I mean, you know, all the numbers would favor Rounds, registration, money, you name it. But I always like contests, and I'm glad to see that the Democrats are going to put someone up.
John Hunter, any final thoughts on Dan Ehlers? I like a good contest, too. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely. I do like candidates for both the primaries and the general election. I think that gives voters a choice and have a chance to discuss these things. I think that's healthy for democracy. Certainly unchallenged members of Congress. I'm not even sure the members of Congress like that. I think it's just best. So I'm glad that he is in, and I'm glad Skylar Borglum is in, that they both bring up a lot of things. We do recognize, Noel brought it up, that our system at the moment favors the incumbency, the ability to raise money, and apparently we're influenced by that. Voters, you know, when people raise a lot of money, it seems to give them an edge at the ballot box. So I wish that were a little bit better balanced, but I'm glad to see Dan in the race.
John Hunter and Noel Hamill, thank you so much for being here with us today. We really appreciate the richness of the conversation. Thanks for your time.
You bet.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you.